This is Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle on 89.3 KPCC, Pasadena, Los Angeles, and 89.1 KUOR, Redlands. Well, great to have you with us today as we open up the phones for you to weigh in on the joint appearances that have been made by outgoing Governor of New York, Eliot Spitzer, and his wife, Silda. Some women have been very upset about the fact that she has stood alongside him a couple of days ago, in which he made a very terse announcement about wrongdoing in which he had been engaged, and then it is aside this morning when he resigned his position.
In the past few days, I've begun to atone for my private failings with my wife, Silda, my children, and my entire family. The remorse I feel will always be with me. Words cannot describe how grateful I am for the love and compassion they have shown me. From those to whom much is given, much is expected. I have been given much: the love of my family, the faith and trust of the people of New York, and the chance to lead the state. I am deeply sorry that I did not live up to what was expected of me. To every New Yorker and to all those who believed in what I tried to stand for, I sincerely apologize. I look at my time as governor with a sense of what might have been. But I also know that as a public servant, I and the remarkable people with whom I worked have accomplished a great deal. There is much more to be done, and I cannot allow my private failings to disrupt the people's work. Over the course of my public life, I have insisted, I believe correctly, that people, regardless of their position or power, take responsibility for their conduct. I can and will ask no less of myself. For this reason, I am resigning from the office of governor.
And with that, Governor Eliot Spitzer of New York announced he will step down effective Monday of next week. Now, standing right by his side, his wife, Silda, as she had been a couple of days ago when he made the initial very brief announcement. And that has created a backlash against her, at least in some quarters. I'd like to hear from you whether you think she made a mistake in standing up silently alongside her husband, apparently offering moral support on both of his public appearances in the wake of the revelations of his scandal involving a call girl ring. We're at 866-893-KPCC. That's 866-893-5722. I've certainly been reading about the response where some women have been critical of her, saying that this humiliated her, that she should not have put herself in this position of standing up there and being supportive of him when she had been betrayed as a spouse. And I have to say, just as a man, my personal reaction, very different. I feel like it's an individual decision, that she's not representing women any more than she's representing corporate attorneys when she gets up there and makes whatever decision that she does. She's an independent, highly educated woman who can more than support herself. She doesn't have to depend on him. So presumably she made a decision, what she thinks is in the best interests of herself or their marriage. She's bright enough to make her own call on this. Yet it seems from what one reads and hears that many women are critical of her, particularly as this follows in a string of such incidents. We've had a number of public figures over the past couple of years who have similarly stood by their husbands in these very public kinds of typically embarrassing situations where the husband is admitting being involved in some sort of extramarital affair. 866-893-KPCC. Joanne joins us from Anaheim. You're on Air Talk.
Hi. You know, I just wanted to say that I think marriage is a pact that people have a right and responsibility to stick to. I myself am getting married this summer, and putting myself in her shoes, I have to say that I would make the same decision. I think people take those vows, and regardless of religious preference and beliefs,
When Bill Clinton's affair with Monica Lewinsky was made public, I mean, there had been allegations of numerous other affairs by Clinton over the years, but the fact that she very publicly stood beside him when he went through the whole Monica Lewinsky scandal, there were people that were critical of that. And, you know, my feeling is you don't know what goes on within a relationship. You don't know what the couple has agreed to, what they know about each other's activities. Whether they feel like, regardless of what happens, they intend to stand by the relationship and not split. And as a result, they don't want to split in that moment. They want to be there to go through the traumatic time with the partner. And so I hear you, Joanna, and good luck with your upcoming marriage. Thanks very much for being with us. 866-893-KPCC. Mina in Beverly Hills, you're on Air Talk. Your thoughts on Sylda Spitzer and her decision to stand by her husband?
Well, I mean, my biggest question is, why does everyone assume that she didn't know? I mean, after all, you know, it was a high-class call service. You know, it's essentially just sex. She may have been fine with it for whatever reason. I mean, given where we live in L.A., open marriage is not exactly unusual.
That's certainly an excellent point. I actually raised this with one of our producers, and she came back with what I thought was an excellent comeback. She said, well, if that was the case, though, they probably allow women to come into the house, and you know, then there wouldn't even be any risk to his career, because they could just have social gatherings at the home and could have a sexual component to them, which I thought was a very good response when I brought up just the point that you did. So she may have known, certainly. However, the fact that he was allegedly spending thousands of dollars for prostitutes and spending the money, going into these offshore companies that had been set up to deal with the prostitution funds, and the legal risk involved to which he subjected himself in doing it, I would be surprised if she did know about it. But we'd have no way of knowing. You're absolutely right. Remember that Sylda, she's an attorney, so she's certainly going to be astute about the law. Her background is as a corporate lawyer. Mina, thank you very much for your call. Julian Sherman Oaks, your thoughts on what Sylda Spitzer decided to do.
Hi, Larry. I never have a knee-jerk reaction to your show. I just listen and then maybe form an opinion. And, you know, once a year I'll call. But this is so not about being an intelligent woman. The woman's in shock. I mean, whether she knew or not, we don't know that. And it's not about integrity. It's not even a decision. It's very possibly shock. I mean, we know what Hillary ultimately chose to do. And nobody knows what this woman's going to choose to do. She's just standing there.
Well, so do you think, if she's in shock, then are you saying she didn't really have a decision, and so she shouldn't be blamed, that she's going through motions?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Okay. So you'd say she shouldn't be blamed, but not for the reason that she's giving informed consent or making a conscious decision. She's just traumatized.
Exactly. She has to metabolize it. You know, she might hit him with an umbrella tonight or whatever.
Yeah. All right, Julie, thanks very much, and I hope you'll feel free to call more frequently. Good to have you with us. Thanks so much. Alex in Hollywood, your thoughts on Sylda Spitzer and how she has stood by her husband on these two public occasions.
Well, I think that the institution of marriage, you know, calls for husbands and wives to be there for one another. I agree with some of the comments that the other call-in persons have said. It's just that, for me, I believe that she is there. How can we make all these assumptions on that she is standing by him? Maybe tomorrow she won't be standing by him, or next week when he resigns, or maybe she will for the sake of the family. But on the other hand, maybe she knew about this, and maybe she just didn't want it in the home. Maybe she knew that he was spending this money, and it was okay, say, like in an open marriage. But she just didn't want it.
She didn't want to be exposed to it. And that's another excellent point. Because someone comes to terms with their partner having relationships outside the marriage doesn't mean they necessarily want their nose rubbed in it. So I think that's another excellent point that you raise, Alex. my sense is that at least some of the criticism that is coming her way, and I have to say at least based on what I've read and heard, and I work in an environment that's overwhelmingly female, so I'm going to be hearing more of a woman's perspective on this, but that the criticism seems to be coming from other women much more than I'm hearing men being critical of her. And part of it, the sense I'm getting, is that they expect she is going to leave him, that she's not going to stand by him long term, but that she's going through the motions because there's some kind of pressure on her, because there's a political expectation of some kind, which his political career is done. So that at this point, that's kind of moot whether she's there or not in terms of his political career. Maybe it would matter on what kind of private sector job he gets later. I don't know that would have any impact whether she's there at the news conference or not. But I think it's not necessarily that people are critical that they think she's going to be with him forever. But there's criticism from some that she shouldn't have been there at these two public events where he's talked about his conduct. Alex, thanks very much. Alex in Pasadena, welcome to Air Talk. Your response to what Zilda Spitzer has done.
Hi, Larry. Just 2 points. First of all, I think that if you're involved in a marriage, you've got to keep that vow, and there's no excuse for breaking it. Second of all, if you're an official with a public trust and you violate that trust by financing activity which is in fact illegal, I don't think there's any excuse for that. But as for a personal attack on Governor Spitzer himself, I don't think we can do that without looking at the whole picture. This could have been a marriage which deteriorated. Professional pressure could have caused it to crumble, so to speak, and the man may have had no sexual outlet whatsoever. A woman has a tendency to shut down sometimes when things aren't going the way she feels is appropriate. And you know, there's no excuse for the professional responsibilities, but you can't condemn the man personally based on these facts, these limited facts that we have. And I'll take my question.
Okay. All right, Alex, I appreciate your perspective. And we certainly have no way of knowing the nature of their relationship, what their private, intimate life was like. And we can't understand how his activity outside the marriage relates to what goes on inside, because we don't know what goes on inside. So that's a point taken and made. Obviously, if the allegations about what he did are correct, and he seems to be confirming them with his resignation, then he engaged in illegal activity, and not just on one impulsive occasion, but apparently numerous times and involving thousands, tens of thousands of dollars to fund that illegal activity when he's in this prominent position. So in terms of criticism of him, I certainly understand that. Criticism of his wife, I have a hard time getting with that idea. But I'd love to hear from you. 866-893-KPCC. This is Air Talk.
Programming is supported by Flex Your Power. The fight against global warming starts at home. And if we choose to replace all of California's old home natural gas water heaters and furnaces with new energy efficient models, it'll be like taking 350,000 cars off the road. Replace all the state's inefficient dishwashers and washing machines, and it'll be the equivalent of eliminating the greenhouse gases from another 54,000 cars. For more energy money and environment-saving tips, you can visit flexyourpower.org.
Programming on 89.3 KPCC is supported by Dance at the Music Center, presenting American Ballet Theater, performing the world's most beloved ballet, Swan Lake, the romantic tale of love, betrayal, and forgiveness, a stunning production set to Tchaikovsky's glorious score. 5 performances only, March 27th through the 30th, at the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion. Information at musiccenter.org, tickets at ticketmaster.com. A panel of outside experts is expected to meet this spring to examine why Los Angeles is experiencing a wave of violent shootings that have injured and killed children. The panel was suggested by Anthony Pacheco, the head of the Los Angeles Police Commission. LAPD Assistant Chief Earl Pazinger says there have been 86 homicides in LA this year, compared to 63 the same time last year. In Calabasas right now, the 101 South has patchy delays from Calabasas to the 405. It's 1021.
Programming on 89.3 KPCC is supported by Air France, now offering daily nonstop service from LAX to London's Heathrow beginning March 30th. Flights to London with a French touch. Details at www.airfrance.com/US.
Programming is supported by Warner Independent Pictures, presenting Snow Angels, written for the screen and directed by David Gordon Green, a heartrending portrayal of the innocence and tragedy of love, starring Kate Beckinsale and Sam Rockwell. Opens this Friday at the Arclight and Landmark.
This is Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. We're talking about the resignation of New York Governor Eliot Spitzer with his wife standing at his side just over an hour ago. She was also there 2 days ago when he publicly announced that there was problematic conduct in his life. And in a backlash of sorts to Silda Spitzer, Eliot Spitzer's wife, there have been a number of newspaper and even magazine articles already in the works looking at the aggrieved wife, or allegedly aggrieved wife, and her publicly standing by her husband in the immediate aftermath when his behavior is outed. And we're talking about whether such criticism is justified. We're at 866-893-KPCC. John in Universal City, you're on Air Talk.
Hi. My point was that I believe it's what's disappointing is that it's cowardly on the part of the men, I think, whether it be with Spitzer or with Senator Craig. They bring these poor women up there. You know, who knows if they've been pressured by their advisors or whomever. And it's almost like to validate them, to say, you know, see, she's cool with it now, so maybe my constituents will be as well. You know, it seems that you can't really fault her because, like your previous caller said, who knows where her mind is at that moment because, you know, her marriage might be falling apart. But then to have pressure her to go up there, I think, is very cowardly, as opposed to just go up by himself and, you know, take his hit for what he did.
Okay. I appreciate that, John. Thanks very much. You agree with John's point that he should have never asked her to do that, and that, you know, unless she absolutely insisted on being there, that he should have gone out there by himself and not taken her up there with him. Let's talk next with Marie in Echo Park. You're on Air Talk. Marie, your thoughts on the criticism that Silda Spitzer is receiving.
Hi. I want to say that I'm appalled that anybody would criticize her at all. She's a smart woman. She knows what she's doing. I find it hard to believe that anybody pressured her, and if they did, she came to her own decision. Personally, I wouldn't do it, but that's me. There might be political reasons why she's up there, like Hillary Clinton had a whole career ahead of her. Maybe, you know, these women are smart. They're not, I don't believe that they're being duped into standing up there by their husbands. I mean, let's not criticize a woman who's just been through, you know, probably the most embarrassing scandal a woman can go through.
All right, Marie, I appreciate it very much. Thank you very much for your call. Sharon in San Marino, good to have you with us on Air Talk.
Hi, good morning, Larry.
Good morning.
I just have to say that this smacks of piling on. You know, this woman has just been humiliated. Her family has been humiliated. And I don't really see what this has to do with her being a lawyer or her being an intelligent woman. I don't think any of us can put ourselves in her shoes. The public, people in New York have barely processed what's happened to her husband. Who are we to assume that she's even been able to process this?
Sharon, go ahead and finish your point.
Well, if she's just because she's standing up there with him, I think she's in a complete state of shock. This is the father of her children. You're a father yourself, Larry. This is a very horrible, serious, shocking thing that's happened to her. It's been played out in public, and I just don't think that right now piling on and essentially blaming the victim is productive.
All right, Sharon, I appreciate it. I wanted to ask you, do you perceive a gender difference here? Because I do, but I'm interested in your perspective on whether you think there's a gender difference. My sense is that on average, women tend to be more critical about other women in public and how they handle themselves under stressful circumstances like this. I mean, we all know that women can be very judgmental about how their women look. I mean, it's not just men who often judge women according to their appearance, but women can be equally, if not at times, more harsh, more critical. And my sense is that if it was an opposite, a guy who's standing up alongside his woman who's a public figure and she has engaged in behavior like this, that there wouldn't be this kind of critique of him the same way that it seems many women are jumping on her. Do you think there's a gender difference here on average?
Absolutely. I completely agree
with
you.
Why? What do you think?
I don't, I don't know what it is.
What is this about?
I think part of it is the fact that she's a very attractive, accomplished woman. And so people, you know, I guess somehow other women feel like she has, you know, somehow made this conscious decision. She has all of these things going for her, and so let's pile on to her because this attractive, very accomplished lawyer is getting up there and standing with this guy who's admitted these horrible things, admitted it because he's resigned. And I don't see, you know what, I think when it comes down to something like this, when it affects your family, your spouse, and your children, and his parents, her parents, her siblings, I think everything boils down to some very basic instincts, and I don't think it has anything to do with the fact that she's got a Harvard law degree.
Okay.
I think it comes down to she's in a complete state of shock. Her world has fallen apart, and I just think it's very presumptuous for us to assume that we could even be able to understand all of the things that she's going through.
Okay.
And I think it's piling on.
Okay.
I think this is a horrible time for
them. Let's get another opinion. Thank you, Sharon. Andrea in Pasadena sees this differently. Andrea, thanks for being with us. Your thoughts on it.
Hi. Well, I guess I have an alternate opinion.
Yeah, good.
I can't imagine how a woman who is betrayed like that, if she's truly in love with her husband, would sit there on the stage with him and support him like this. I mean, she's the one who was betrayed, and also the whole state. This was illegal, not just an affair. And the only conclusion I can come to is that the marriage is not about love at all, and that the marriage is about politics and power, and she wants to be with somebody who has power and, you know, could potentially be president or whatever at some point. And I feel just like Hillary, she wants to be in this relationship, and the fact that he does these things, she, I'm sure, doesn't like them, but it's not as important to her as being there for the sense of power and what it might get her in the future.
She has to know that his political career is over. That there's, I mean, he may be making a ton of money in the private sector after this, after he steps down on Monday, but his career in public office is gone. It's unfortunate for him. He's a young guy, by all accounts, with a very bright future in front of him, but that's over now. So she's not going to get any mileage out of that. Let me offer this alternate scenario. Could it be that she loves him very deeply, that she really, she digs him, she cares about him, and that she looks on this as obviously a horrible betrayal and a flaw? Let's go with that. Let's say she didn't know, and that this was a tremendous betrayal. But she really loves him, and despite this horrific flaw, she wants to stay with him, and she sees her life as being built around, you know, with him in the future. Is that a possible scenario in your view?
It's possible, but it's I still have a hard time believing that, considering I'm married and I have a husband that I love very much and I trust 100%. And if suddenly that trust was gone, I'm not saying I would leave him necessarily. I mean, we'd have to work through it. But the day that I find out that that trust is gone and that he has completely betrayed me, I'm going to need to walk away and be away for a while and let him try and make amends before I'm going to stand there next to him and be so supportive.
You know, though, that there are many women who do stay and who there have been whole books written with women giving testimonials about after the affair and how the marriage ended up being better than it had been before because they worked through it. And yes, it took a long time for forgiveness and healing to take place. But there are marriages that end that you continue successfully once they work through the betrayal.
Right, but that's after you work through it, not the
right
day that it found out.
Okay. That's all right. But I guess the only issue is that she may, with whatever anger or hurt she's feeling, may be looking down that road and believes that they're going to get through this.
Well, hopefully they can then.
Andrea, thanks very much. Really appreciate your weighing in on Air Talk. With us next is Jonathan in Laguna Niguel. Welcome.
Hi, Larry. Good to talk to you. I've been listening to a lot of this conversation, and I'm just really amazed at how many people are making assumptions about something that we have no idea what's going on. One of the things I read in the first 24 hours after this was that one of the reasons for the delay in his making any announcement was that his wife was arguing strongly that he should not resign, I don't know if that's true, but if it is, it's totally consistent with him, you know, her getting up there and standing next to him.
I now recall reading that. I'd forgotten about that. But, yes, I read the same thing, that, yeah, in these meetings with the aides, that she was pushing seemingly the hardest for him to hold on.
Yeah, so we just really have no idea what's going on in that relationship. And I don't think you can judge her in any way, shape, or form unless you know what her motivations are. And without that, you know, all this moralizing and all this judgmentalism is just foolish to my point of view.
Okay. All right, Jonathan, thanks very much. Christy in Vernon, you're on Air Talk.
Hi, Larry. Good to talk with you.
Thanks for joining.
I just wanted to make the point. You guys are talking about a double standard between men and women. I've heard a few callers say, hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. I hear a few callers say, well, she took a vow, you know, it's her responsibility to stand by her man, la, 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 la. It's the, you know, marriage is an institution. What about his breaking of the vows? Why is it her responsibility to stand by him after he betrayed her and he broke their marriage vows?
Well, the argument on the other side would be, what are his intentions about how he wants the marriage to go forward? And is she willing to trust that he can fulfill those intentions if he wants the marriage to move forward and that he can come out of this experience able to openly and honestly recommit? And again, who knows? I mean, who knows? What?
We don't know.
And,
we're all speculating, but I just found it interesting, you know, about the double standard, that it's the woman's responsibility to stand by her man after he has messed up. You know what I'm saying? It's like that was my interesting point.
Okay, and I'm not sure that there was, in terms of a double standard, any contention that it had it been the opposite, if it's the woman public official who has ongoing business with a prostitution ring, let's say, that the husband, you know, shouldn't stand by her, as in this case, Silda Spitzer has publicly stood by her husband at these two news events. So that, to me, would kind of be the more apples-to-apples comparison for whether there's a double standard or not. But I appreciate your point. Great calls, as always. Love to hear the varying perspectives on the criticism that has been made of Silda Spitzer for standing by her husband. This is Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. Well, I have to admit, my jaw dropped when this story came across the wires yesterday, that at least one in four teenage American girls has a sexually transmitted disease. This from a first-of-its-kind federal study that startled even experts in the adolescent health field. Some doctors saying the numbers might be a reflection of abstinence-only sex education, others' teens' own sense of invulnerability. Some sexually transmitted infections can cause infertility and even cancer, so U.S. health officials are calling for better screening, vaccination, and prevention. Only about half of the girls in the study acknowledged having sex. So that means, of course, that half of those who are having sex tested positive for a sexually transmitted disease. Now, the definition of sex is a pretty squishy one. Some teens define sex only as intercourse, yet other types of intimate sexual behavior can lead to sexually transmitted disease, such as oral sex can be responsible for that. Well, joining us to talk about this issue and the remarkably high percentage of teen girls who have sexually transmitted diseases at some point in their teen years is Sarah Forehand. She's Epidemic Intelligence Service Officer at the Centers for Disease Control. She is the lead author of this study. Thank you very much for being with us on Air Talk, Dr. Forehand.
You're quite welcome.
Well, were you even surprised by these numbers?
Well, we've known that the prevalence of STDs, of individual STDs, has been is high among teens from other studies that have just looked at diseases one at a time. And in different kind of situations, not nationally. So it's not surprising information, but it
this study was able to look at the overall burden of STDs among this group and really confirm that nationally we have a big problem among adolescent females.
And among which groups in this 14 to 19 age group had the highest levels of STDs?
We were able to look at a number the information from a number of different angles, and we found that the African American adolescent teens had the highest rate of those girls. Also, those with more partners and longer sexual experience. But one of the big findings of this study was that there's a high prevalence of STDs, even with less than 1 year of sexual activity, and even among those girls that reported having just one sexual partner.
Human papillomavirus was responsible for more STD cases than any other STD?
The human papillomavirus was the predominant STD that we found. Mm-hmm.
And that was in 18% of these teen girls?
In 18% overall. And human papillomavirus, while many of these infections clear, some of them persist. And it's among that group of people that are at risk for cervical cancer.
And this is the STD for which there is a vaccine now.
There absolutely is a prevention for much of cervical cancer through the vaccine that's been out for a short time. And CDC recommends that females between the ages of 11 and 26 be vaccinated.
Chlamydia responsible for 4% of the cases. I would have expected that actually to be higher. Trichomoniasis, is that how you say it?
Trichomoniasis.
For 2.5%, and I'm not familiar with that. What is that sexually transmitted disease?
Trichomonas vaginalis is the organism, and it is a parasite, and it is a sexually transmitted disease, excuse me, that is responsible sometimes for symptoms of vaginal discharge, but it is also linked with preterm labor and also increased risk of HIV acquisition.
And herpes simplex virus, 2%. So gonorrhea, for example, would be statistically insignificant, the number of cases?
At the time of our analysis, the gonorrhea data from this survey, which is the national, excuse me, the NHANES survey, which stands for National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, NHANES, NHANES Survey,
mm-hmm.
That information, the gonorrhea information for this age group had not been released.
Okay.
But the prevalence for gonorrhea in this age group is known to be low.
Low in this age group. We'll continue our conversation on yesterday's survey results announced showing 1 in 4 girls aged 14 to 19 has a sexually transmitted disease. This is Air Talk.
Programming on 89.3 KPCC is supported by City of Hope, advising that every step is critical to curing breast cancer. From early detection and accurate diagnosis to less invasive surgical techniques that can lead to high survival rates and faster recoveries. If you have breast cancer, you can call 800-826-HOPE or you can ask your doctor for a referral. City of Hope, science saving lives.
We have a giveaway for you right now on KPCC. It's for a pair of tickets to the musical Mask at the Pasadena Playhouse Tuesday, March 18th. Based on a true story, this is a musical journey about an unconventional biker mother and her son. It's directed by the creator of Ain't Misbehavin' and Fosse and features songs by the composer-lyricist team of You've Lost That Love and Feeling. Tickets available at PasadenaPlayhouse.org. We'll take the third caller at 626- 585-7827. 93. The head of the Southern California slaughterhouse at the center of the largest beef recall in U.S. history admitted today that cattle were illegally slaughtered at his plant and that cows were too sick to stand, were forced into the food supply. Westland Hallmark President Steve Mandel made the admissions after a congressional panel forced him to watch undercover video of abuses of his cattle. Two workers at the plant have been arrested on animal cruelty charges by San Bernardino County authorities in an ongoing criminal investigation. A huge fire broke out this morning at an elementary school in Anaheim. Some 75 firefighters battled the blaze before knocking it down. The fire at Palm Lane Elementary broke out as the site is under renovation, and students of Palm Lane have been attending classes off campus. There were no injuries in this incident. Sunshine today, but it's going to start getting a little cloudy tomorrow. A chance of rain over the weekend. Highs mostly in the 70s. It's 10:41.
Great to have you with us on Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Sexually transmitted diseases among the teen population, age 14 to 19, a new study that has come out from federal officials showing such a high rate, or at least what seems to me to be a high rate. I assume you concur when you've got a quarter of girls and very young women who are in this position. We invite your calls at 866-893-KPCC. That's 866-893-5722 if you have questions for our guests. We continue with Sarah Forehand of the Centers for Disease Control. She's the lead author of this study. I know that African-American girls showed the highest rate in terms of a racial or ethnic group. Are there particular practices in that population that you think are contributing to the higher rate?
No, we don't. The risk of getting an STD is related to having exposure to a partner that has an STD, and the community prevalence in the African American community is higher, and so with the same sexual behavior, the risk for an African American young woman to acquire an STD is higher.
All right, and
for any other teen.
Okay. And then other ethnic groups, were there differences among Latinos, Caucasian, Asian American, any other groups, or were they pretty consistent?
We were able to analyze, we had adequate ability to analyze white African Americans and the Mexican American community. The rates of STDs among the 14 to 19 year old female adolescents are similar among whites and Mexican Americans.
All right. 866-893-KPCC, the number to join us. What do you think in terms of policy or education is suggested by these results, Dr. Forehand?
I think that these results really point to the need to make our teens aware of the problem and to help protect them. Certainly, abstinence is the surest way not to acquire an STD, but for those who choose to have sex, it's very important for them to know that limiting the number of partners and also the correct and consistent use of condoms is very, very important. It's important that they understand about the individual sexually transmitted diseases as well. It's important that they know that they can protect themselves by being immunized for with HPV vaccine, and also the need for chlamydia screening among sexually active young women on a yearly basis is recommended in order to identify and treat chlamydia and thereby skirt the long-term serious side effects that can be a result of that particular disease.
Do you think that primary care physicians and OBGYNs are suggesting STD testing frequently enough for teens?
We know there are missed opportunities for with respect to providers and also with respect to the public asking for this kind of testing. And we're hoping that with these data that have come forth from this study, that this will raise the awareness of among providers to offer our teens testing and also vaccine in order to prevent long-term problems that can occur with STD.
Thank you very much, Dr. Forehand. We appreciate your talking about your study that you you led on this. Very important information for people to consider. Thanks for your time.
You're welcome.
From the Centers for Disease Control, lead author of the study, Sarah Forehand, to try and help us localize the issue of sexually transmitted diseases among teenage girls is Mary Jane Wagley, the president and CEO of Planned Parenthood Los Angeles. Ms. Wagley, welcome back to Air Talk.
Thank you so much, Larry, for doing a show about this critically important matter.
Do we have any sense of, in our region of the country, particularly given the large Mexican-American population, which is one of those that was studied here, whether these numbers would be comparable locally?
We have every reason to believe that rates of sexually transmitted diseases are as high or higher in Los Angeles County than in the national study. There was actually a study done by the Public Health Institute here in California about a year ago that estimated that there were 360,000 new cases of sexually transmitted diseases among young people, which represents, again, one in four or five individuals. Now, this study was done among 15 to 24-year-olds, but what the national study is saying is that this is pretty much the same case among 14 to 19-year-olds. This is a very serious problem here in Los Angeles County. And as you know, the rates of lack of insurance here in Los Angeles County and therefore lack of access to regular and preventive health care as well as education are very high in this county.
Of the girls and young women who come into Planned Parenthood's universe either seeking information about birth control or getting, you know, picking up condoms or prescriptions for birth control, is testing frequently or typically suggested for those women?
It is our policy at Planned Parenthood to suggest to every woman under the age of 26 that she be tested for sexually transmitted diseases because of what we know about the prevalence of sexually transmitted diseases. We, of course, routinely ask that people have pap smears, which test for the human papilloma virus and also for early stages of cervical abnormalities that could lead to cervical cancer. And we also ask every young woman that comes into our clinics to be tested for chlamydia and gonorrhea. They don't all agree to do it, I hope that this study will help convince young women that this is critically important for them. One of the issues, as I'm sure you know, is that both for HPV as well as for chlamydia, there are often no symptoms. So teens wouldn't be aware from what they're feeling that they might have a sexually transmitted disease. And it's important for teens to understand that they need to be tested whether they're feeling any symptoms or not, because the risks are significant. Chlamydia can lead to infertility, and chlamydia and gonorrhea are gateway diseases for HIV, and of course HPV, as Dr. Forehand has emphasized, can lead to cervical cancer, which is an extremely life-threatening disease.
So,
something like 40% of those who actually do contract cervical cancer die.
So in some cases, girls will have genital warts as a result of HPV, but do we know what even percentage of cases there is an apparent physical manifestation like that?
You know, I am not a doctor, so I don't know the percentage of that, but I don't think it's a majority,
okay,
for example.
All right. Let's take a listener call. Nadja in the Silver Lake District of Los Angeles, you're on Air Talk.
Hi. I just wanted to say that if we look at the raw data alone, there are some people who would misconstrue the numbers, African-American young women having higher instances of STDs as somehow being an indication that these girls may be more promiscuous. And I wanted to make it, well, at least bring up the point that I believe in the African-American community, what exists is a sort of social conservatism. That being said, what happens is the young girls that I interact with on a daily basis, they may be sexually active, but because their parents and the community disapprove of that activity, nobody is speaking to them in real terms about how to protect themselves. So what they do is they do things that they think, you know, might be protecting them from these STDs. They may use a condom, but they don't use it consistently. And then once they've had a partner for a certain amount of time, they think, oh, well, we don't have to use condoms because, well, he's been my boyfriend for a year.
I know him, et cetera. Yeah.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I think that's an excellent point that you raised. And just to reinforce what Dr. Forehand said, she said, you know, this doesn't have to do with any difference in practices that the study detected, such as number of sexual partners or that sort of thing. What she said is that there is a higher prevalence of sexually transmitted diseases within the African-American community. So if black girls are having African-American boys as their partners, they're going to have a higher potential rate of contracting the STD. So,
Larry, yes. Can I comment on that?
Yes.
I think what your caller raises is so important, and that what this study should be pushing us all to do is make sure that we have many avenues for communication and education of teens about what they need to know to stay safe. And in particular, the most important group of folks that need to be talking to their teens openly and honestly about sex and relationships and their values is parents. And for so many parents, as your caller points out, it's extremely uncomfortable to talk about these issues. They don't have the experience in their own growing up that would teach them how to do it. And so I think we as a society need to do more to help parents learn how to talk to their kids about sex.
There's certainly some terrific books that are out there. I mean, there's plenty. There's information online about how to. There's a lot of information there. But I think for many parents, it's something they really don't want to think about. It's kind of an avoidance issue.
Exactly. And we at Planned Parenthood have programs that teach parents how to talk to their teens about sex. We have programs where we bring mothers and their 9 to 13-year-old daughters together so that we can help them facilitate their starting the conversation together. And all of the studies show three very important things. One is talking to teens about sex and educating them about it is not a green light for them to become sexually active. Actually, when parents or schools talk to teens about these matters, they actually tend to delay the onset of sexual activity. The second important point is that teens who talk to their who have an open communication with their families actually tend to become sexually active later. And finally, when they do become sexually active, they're much more likely to use protection. So that's the way we as a society can keep teens safe. That's what I think all of us want. Is for our teens to be safe and healthy.
Nadja, thanks for your call. Joining us, the Associate Director of the UCLA AIDS Institute, Edwin Baird. Sir, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Well, share with us about HIV in this population of 14 to 19-year-old girls.
Yes. The point I wanted to make is that the discussion so far has focused on non-fatal sexually transmitted diseases. But whenever there is a spike in infections and sexually transmitted diseases in any population, it is a marker for a spike in the rate of HIV infection. And we know, in fact, that the most explosive epidemic in the United States of HIV, not in terms of absolute numbers, but in terms of growth, is in young women, particularly young women of color. And the data that the CDC has just announced mirrors what we're seeing in HIV infections. And I think it's imperative that when any healthcare provider sees a young woman with an STD, that woman be offered an HIV test. The CDC's policy now is to offer these tests to anyone between the ages of 13 and 64 who's never previously been tested for HIV, and I think counseling should be a part of this too. because chlamydia is a manageable disease and HIV is only manageable now with at huge expense, and it's a lifelong, an incurable problem.
All right. Thank you, Edwin Baird. We appreciate your weighing in on that. Mary Jane Wagley, you want to comment as well?
Yes, absolutely. And I completely agree with your caller. And we do offer HIV testing as well as chlamydia and gonorrhea testing and pap smears for HPV testing. These tests are easy to do today. They're simple. They're painless. And it's so very important that people get tested. You can come to Planned Parenthood, and there are also other clinics across the county that offer STD testing of all kinds. But please come in. Please get tested. And this is for teens, but it's also for the rest of the population, as your caller rightly says.
All right. Thank you, Edwin Baird. We appreciate your being with us. What about the HPV vaccine that has been developed? Now, is that available? Can it be used on boys as well, or only girls for that vaccine?
Interesting that you raise that. The studies are currently ongoing about the value of the HPV vaccine for boys, and it is expected, the trials are occurring right now, but it is expected that this will be a valuable strategy for boys as well. I myself am the mother of three daughters. I wish that the HPV vaccine had been available when my daughters were young. I would certainly have given them the vaccine, and I absolutely encourage all of the parents listening on this call to take your daughters to your doctors and get this vaccine. It can save lives, and it's so important to do it. And it's most effective if you get the vaccine before you become sexually active.
All right, Melanie in Topanga, you're on Air Talk.
Hi. With all the talk about daughters and sons, I just wanted to make the point. Usually, the focus is on having the communication with the girls. And I just wanted to say I think it's really important for parents to communicate with their sons that they have a huge responsibility in this. And even though they may not be the ones who are going to be picking up a lifelong medical problem, you know, they need to think about being aware of passing it on to what they may think of casual partners, passing these things on for a lifetime. And I think that point needs to really be, you know, brought home to them.
Well, and even broaden it out from there, being responsible sexually generally and what that means and how you relate to a person within a sexual context and, you know, what is being a person who thinks about their sexuality and doesn't just react in the moment willy-nilly. I think that's such an important point you make about parents having that level of communication with boys and girls. Melanie, thanks very much. Appreciate your call. Also, our thanks to Mary Jane Wagley of Planned Parenthood Los Angeles. She's the president CEO of the organization, weighing in to try and localize some of this very important information that's come from the Centers for Disease Control. If you want to look at the study showing 1 in 4 girls age 14 to 19 with sexually transmitted diseases, you can go to the website cdc.gov, and they'll have additional information. And tomorrow there's going to be even more from this study that'll be out on the CDC website. This is Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC.
Programming on 89.3 KPCC is supported by the Museum of Latin American Art in Long Beach, named by Condé Nast Traveler in 2007 as one of the 5 new reasons to visit Los Angeles. Presenting Walter Goldfarb, Delirium, the first solo museum exhibition in the United States by this Brazilian artist. The exhibition showcases mixed media works that trace the artist's development over the last decade. More at molaa.org.
It's 10:59 at KPCC. LA Unified Schools Superintendent David Brewer joins Pat Morrison today to answer questions about the second largest school district in the nation. We're also talking about the smallest school districts in the nation, kitchen tables where children are homeschooled, and about a California law requiring parents to have a teaching credential. That's starting today at 1 o'clock on 89.3 KPCC. In Encino, on the 101 South before Haskell, a stalled car is blocking the second lane from the left. It's going to be backed up to Canoga Avenue. And in Santa Clarita on the 5 North before Calgrove, a two-car crash is blocking the two right lanes, and it's slow from the 14. It's 11 o'clock.
This is 89.3 KPCC, Pasadena, Los Angeles, a public service of Pasadena City College, welcoming international students from more than 50 countries. Information at pasadena.edu.
This is Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Is war in space inevitable? A dozen countries can reach space with satellites and therefore with weapons. In a congressional report of 7 years ago, co-authored by former Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, a recommendation was made that the U.S. develop new military capabilities to operate from, in, and through space. But arms control advocates believe space should remain a place for exploration and research, not for weapons, particularly given that the United States, more than any other country, is reliant on satellite technology for its ground-based military operations, as well as for communications, banking, and more. We focus on that issue of weaponization of space coming up in this next half hour of Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC.